Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a house.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. We got Matt Byrne on the board. We have Craig Pappas in studio. S&P futures down 17. NASDAQ futures down 112. We have movement again in the interest rates as we have the bonds are up 5 basis points, 4.13. I think we have Greg searching for some headphones because Friday we had a headphone issue. But now we don't. Very interesting. We had a headphone issue. And did you don't have headphones? Yeah, you do. Can you hear anything?
Can't hear anything.
Are you plugged in?
Yeah, I'm plugged in.
Which one?
5.
You sure? Try another one. He's not exactly our engineer, but he's our guy. Where are you now?
See if this works.
I can hear you.
Yeah, there we go. All right.
All right, you too high or too low?
It's good.
All right.
It's good.
So we have Greg finally got his act together over there. We have interest rates creeping. Greg, we have
T. Rowe Price said they're going to 5%. Is that what I saw?
I have a feeling they're going a lot higher, but I, you know,
think you would be in the minority.
I'm always in the minority.
Ah.
The Fed is trying to do an interesting thing here, in that they're pushing money in the system, but they're also lowering their balance sheet. Which, if many recall, back in the COVID era,
that's a pretty big spread. Some people are. Or, I think the current prognostication is 367, and T. Rowe is saying 5%.
Well, it's already 4.13.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's one thing that kind of, and well, in one man's opinion, there's one thing that kind of knocked us off our. I was looking here at the TLT, which is the ETF for the 20 plus year bonds, right? It used to be Lehman's? I don't know who it is now, but it was Lehman at one time, but the now it's not. And they anyway, they made it up to 176, and now it's where are we now? We're 93.
yeah.
And you know, it's, but we had the most unusual phenomenon back in the COVID era, is that the one of the few things, I'd say, Greg, the two things that in my career that were so obvious, yet it took forever to happen. When I first started in the business, the Dow was like 800, interest rates were 15%. I said, you know what, this can't possibly stay like this. I don't know what's going to happen to the country. So at some point here, these interest rates have to go down, and if they do, the market's got to go up, right? I mean, I don't think there's any question about this. However, it took a solid year and a half, at least, of me thinking that way before it happened.
Well, what's the difference between 13 and...
Well, 2.
And
2%, which is a big difference. Or, now we move 0.25% and we get our behind in an uproar, right?
Right, right.
So what I'm saying is, in those days, the Fed didn't suppress the bonds going up, are going down by buying them. Where this time, even though they were pouring all this money in the system and creating all this inflation, where you should have had people said, God, I'm not going to lend these guys money for 5 years, 4 years, 10 years at, you know, whatever, 1.5% when the inflation's 5 or 10 or whatever the hell we got up to. But every time he tried to sell the bonds, the Fed bought them and put them on their balance sheet, right?
Yeah.
So the balance sheet from early 2020 went from four trillion to 9, right?
It just looks like.
And now they've come off.
Like, yeah.
So if they're not going to buy this stuff and basically jam it up your behind when you're trying to sell it, what it means is we might go back to the legitimate formula that your rates are the regular rate of interest, whatever it happens to be, which is by supply and demand, plus the inflation, which is if I lend you a money for 5 years and inflation will be 4% a year, guess what? I want 20% on the 4 years just because the money you give me back is not as worth as the same money I gave you, right?
Right.
Well, we haven't thought that way in how many years?
Long time.
Long time. But, I mean, that is... So I have the Fed balance sheet here topping out at... let's go into the 1 year here.
One interesting thing that I think Druckenmiller said over the weekend, or maybe it was Friday, was he thinks that nominal GDP should, in general, mostly match up with the 10-year rate. So I thought that was interesting.
Why?
He said it's general trend, and wouldn't be surprised if it would trend towards each other that way.
All right, so what does... If you do the formula that I just told you, what does that mean? What does it put your real growth at?
Whose real growth? Do we have 4%?
Well, I'm saying if there's nominal growth, which is what they, you know, the number they publish. Actually, it's not the number they publish. What they publish is the nominal growth, the total value of goods and services, the GDP, minus the PCE calculator, which is their ridiculous. We can't tell you what it is. But it's the one we really look at, calculator.
Right.
So if the nominal growth is 8% and your inflation is 5, your real growth is 3.
Tree,
as they say in the South Side. And so what he's really saying is if the nominal GDP equals the 10-year rate, he's saying that the interest rate's 3%, okay, and you pull one off, you end
that
up with
difference
a
two, is yeah, going to be the
is the real is the real number.
Yeah.
Oh, because yeah, it should not if it just equals the inflation, you're not growing, right?
Right. That would be an issue for.
So he's just saying in a different way what I just said.
Yeah.
But so I mean, I got the Fed balance sheet going from 8.9 trillion. Down to 7.1 in basically, where are we here? That's in March of 2022. So it's dropped
20%.
Yeah, 20% almost in that length of time. So they're not out buying the bonds, basically jamming them up your behind. So I think that the bonds are free essentially to go down to where they're a real number. And if that's the case, and if they're pouring money in the system, I don't think I'm not convinced we're not going to have a 4% inflation rate. If we do, then the 10-year is going to be 6.5 or 7. I'm talking about a real rate, not their idea of a rate.
Right.
So anyway, the question is,
banks would be happy, huh?
Well, banks are happy all the time. They're protected. They're paying people nothing, and they're charging 20-some%. Hey, by the way,
they got a lot of running expenses though.
Yeah, I got a notice from one of my credit cards that I probably shouldn't have.
The trading in for the investment banks too, and the banks have sky high trading profits and marked. They're not completed losses. They're not, but they've got huge losses in their mark to market portfolios.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how they performed, even. Even the strong banks, you know, J.P. Morgan and such, that reported, everybody's got losses on the books, but their short-term profits went up. So,
well, the longer you can wait that out, though, the
you
better
saw,
you are.
What was it? In a month, they've gone up 10% or
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So that's big.
I will freely admit strengths and weaknesses, and one of my weaknesses, I cannot, even though I had a lot of accounting and finance, I cannot give you any kind of an assessment on whether these big banks are doing good or bad from what they tell us.
Well, I mean, the unrealized losses are
so... Well, I know, but if they bought those bonds in 2021 or 2020, we're already halfway through them, right?
Yeah.
30 years, not so much, but I don't know how many of those guys bought that stuff. But they're already halfway through them. So if we puddle around for another 3 or 4 years, you know, they're not going to be... Well, they may be unrealized losses, but nowhere near the same, right?
Right, and I think the total that they were saying at least... earlier last year was $500 billion or $600 billion in total losses.
Well, I mean, what, so you ever heard of the? I know you have, but what is your definition of the term zombie bank?
It's what happens if the interest rate goes above 5% or so. All their capital has been wiped out by losses and on their portfolios.
Okay, but it's...
If you get a bank run at that point, then your bank is out of business.
Well, okay, one of the most difficult things if you take money in banking is, for banks, there's a huge difference between their cash situation and their equity situation. So you can have what they call a zombie bank, where it was a term they used for the Japanese banks back in, God, when was it? It was in the 80s? When did the Japanese market top out the first time at 35,000? Was it the late 80s? You're good at that. You can find that. It was somewhere way back. That's when they bought Pebble Beach, and they bought a whole bunch of stuff in Chicago, where Tokyo real estate was so ridiculously high. Remember, you know, one of the airline mergers was essentially because of that. Remember, you're too young. Remember Northwest Airlines?
Yeah, they merged.
Yeah, well, they actually got bought out, I think. But
so Delta bought them?
You know, that I'm not sure. That's another thing. Matt Byrne can check that. Give you guys both an assignment. You know, they bought them and everybody thought, what are you paying that price for? I think they owned a square block of real estate in Tokyo.
It was worth the acquisition.
It was with him worth the entire acquisition cost. Some bizarre.
Little arbitrage there.
Well, same thing happened when Capital Cities Broadcasting bought ABC. ABC owned like a square block in Manhattan.
Nailed it.
Yeah. It was depreciated down to zero.
Yeah, here it is. Unrealized gains and losses on investment securities in billions. It looks like 2024 we're up, but it's about $525 billion.
Okay, but
losses for the banks.
What the term zombie bank means is that in Japan, unlike, thankfully, in this country, but in Japan and in Europe, it was there, boy, when I was in 91, did that. One thing nice about our banking system is common stocks and companies is not considered good credit, right? Or good equity. So if Lakeside Bank, for instance, went out and bought 1,000 shares of NVIDIA, I mean, they can do it, but they can't count it as bank equity. The only stock, get a load of this, Greg, you'll love this. The only stock that was considered to be good equity was Fannie and Freddie Preferred, and it went under.
Really?
Yeah. It was the only stock a bank could buy and have it be considered good credit was Fannie and Freddie Preferred, and all went toast. Anyway, what happens is if a bank goes out and buys, like the bank, you know, let's say the Pappas Bank of Japan went out and bought, you know, put $50 million in the Japanese stock market at 35,000. Which a lot of them did, and all of a sudden, stock market collapses to 5,000 or 8,000, where the hell it went down to. Now, this is money you paid out cash, right?
Right.
So your unrealized losses are whatever, you know, 5,000 times whatever.
Is there any way that all these banks can hold to maturity?
Well,
I just don't see it.
What I'm saying is, now with stock, there is no maturity. So they say that. But what happens is, you essentially, the bank is considered without equity, right? So it's a zombie bank. But in terms of you and I using the bank, there's no cash loss here. So you and I bringing in our checking account and getting an auto loan and all the other kind of stuff, that all still works fine. even though the bank doesn't really is essentially toast.
But yeah, the bank's toast, but once people get wind of the bank being toast, then they start pulling money.
No, they don't. That's the point. They didn't in Japan because the government said they were still okay.
And the government said they were okay up to $250,000 or whatever.
I have no idea what the SIPC is in a
here would be that would be a huge issue.
Okay, what I'm saying is you can conceivably now if you have a smaller bank like Silicon Valley Bank, and they have a massive investment in say, Pappas apartment buildings that go under, and they have an equity call. Okay, now this is something we all know. The place went under is worth nothing. They have an equity call where the Federal Reserve or who's ever in charge of that bank, depending on how big they are, is going to go in there and they're going to try and get rid of the assets and absorb some of the loans and do all that crap. What I'm saying is when you're big enough, if you bought stock in something and the stock's way down, you don't have to do that. You can just let depositors and other people go back and forth for 20 years like they did in Japan. So in other words, if Citigroup, and I don't think they do, if they actually bought enough of these things where if you marked them to market that they were in trouble, and you just say, so what? You're in trouble. And still, you walk in and you put your paycheck in there, and you walk in and you get your credit card loan, and they're making money on the other side. You can just wait if they're big enough. That's what's known as a zombie bank. All the banks in Japan were technically bankrupt. And yet, they all I think they're okay now. They just waited it all out for, like, decades.
Interesting.
It's a difference in one is your cash okay, you just don't have any equity. You know, by the way, the market's back up 1,000 in the last year. You get a little more equity, right?
Interesting.
Yeah, it's the most bizarre thing because they paid essentially. It'd be different if they had margin loans on the stock, where all of a sudden they're getting called.
But they don't.
They don't. Right? They just paid forward cash. Same way these guys bought the treasuries.
Huh.
So, Silicon Bank essentially got in trouble and had to liquidate. Well, the government's never going to make Bank of America or Wells Fargo liquidate. So what's the difference?
So they're just zombies.
I think they're
zombies earning a decent amount of money right now.
Which, I mean, they're...
But they're not zombies yet. I mean, would take a move, an interest rate move higher, which would mean they would actually earn more money, which might...
Yeah, so it's... But, I mean, in terms of... I don't think that they have no equity if they had to mark this to market. I think they would just be...
Not yet, no. But if it starts getting over 5.5%, then they're in trouble, right?
What do you think the insurance company's balance sheet looks like? Ugh. So a lot of these companies that are paying out all this stuff in Florida and in roof damage here for the people who get all the hail... Those people probably own federal bonds, right?
Yeah.
Or even long-term corporates. So this can't be a great year for those guys.
So what you're telling me is they're going to change the rules to where they're going to be able to use stocks as...
I gotta hope not.
Is that what you're telling me is coming?
Well, it was so bizarre. Back in... we went in, like, 91. Dr. J somehow got this gig together to go do some lecturing on options over in Europe. And so we went to Credit Anstalt in Austria, which was quite the place. Got to talk about a big old, just what you, in your mind's eye, what you picture as a bank building, huge column, sort of like the Continental Bank here. It looks just like the old Continental Bank building. Continental Bank's been around for a while. And we got the lecture in the boardroom. None of the guys we were lecturing had even been on that floor. That was for the Mucky Mucks, right? And you sat down in the boardroom, and everybody had a pedal by their foot. You hit the pedal, some guy could come in, and we didn't on a Saturday. Some guy would run in there and give, what do you want, water, coffee, and they'd serve you while you were in the board meeting. You know, your own pedal to call the butler, basically.
Perfect.
How was that cool? So, kind of a story. We did some lecturing on Friday night. And because we get there, and then the next morning we're going to be all day. Well, of course, they decide we're going to go out to this something called a haroon. Do you know what a haroon is?
Haroon?
Yeah, a haroon.
I've heard that term before.
It's when you.
Wish I was better traveled.
Well, it's something about when you pick all the grapes It's like early wine or something. I don't know. But it's not as much alcohol in it, so you can drink like three times as much before you get sloshed. And we were young. So we meet all these people at this Haroon, and there's a big like a smorgasbord or a buffet. You go and buy stuff, but the only thing they're not big on beef over there, but you buy fleisch. Fleisch is pork or chicken. It's called fleisch is meat, like flesh, which I guess it is, right? So we sit there with all these people and drink it too much, and everybody gets up to leave, and all of a sudden a second group of the people we lectured come down. Ah, come on, you guys can't leave yet, right? So we sit down, and we should have been gone. And then, of course, then we finally get to leave, like about midnight. And one of us has a brilliant idea. Hey, let's go to that bar we went to last night, which, of course, we should not have done. And anyway, we pile in late. We're walking to a lecture in the morning. And Jan says to me, well, how bad are you? And I go, I'm pretty bad. And he goes, tell you what, I'll do the first hour if you do the next two. And I go, you're on, right? So we get up in the boardroom. And this is a true story. This is stuff that happens. I'm sitting there going, and it's hot in this thing, and I'm hot, right? So I go to open the window. The window had not been opened in probably 100 years, right? But I managed to, it's one of these big swing-out windows type of thing. So I swing out the window, and guess who's right across the street on the balcony sunbathing?
All right.
Some doll naked.
Nice.
So, of course, we
got your energy back.
Well, we had to...
You could take pictures.
We had a water break for the... Hey guys, we... What do you say? We take five. Come over and look out to one. It's stunning, but I mean, she didn't mind. She loved it, in fact. Anyway, but we got the... These guys are trading options. Not so much in Austria, but then we went to Germany. These guys are trading options against essentially banks. And I go, well, who's on the other side of this trade? They named some German stock and said it's 85% owned by these four banks. I don't think it's this rate. We're trying to trade options against four banks that are trading options, and they own all the stock. Well, yeah, and they can move the stock anytime they want, whenever they felt like it. And I go, it's even weirder.
You're gonna get taken for a ride.
Yeah, and it's even weirder because I was actually sitting down making markets with like four people, three of them ladies, of course, and I was kind of enjoying myself, but they were so German. You couldn't have it, like in here, we got all these PCs sitting on the desk and screens. You can't do that in Germany because that looks horrible. You can't walk in and see screens sitting there because people look like a bunch of schmucks. So all the screens were buried into the counters. Well, that means you got all the heat under the counter, so there's cold piping running through there.
Uh-oh.
It was like $2,000 for a station.
Oh, my.
Just this is back in 91. Right? Yeah. So anyway, so I go... I said, you guys are making 10 up markets. You know, this is on the exchange. What's the German exchange? The DAX. And I said, how do you? We have all these 100 and 2 and 3 and 400 lots in your portfolio. Oh, they call us up for like a trade. Wait. They don't put the trade on the exchange. Oh no, they call us and we do it. We say okay, we'll do that. And then
OTC baby.
But then it gets into your position at their OCC. So even though there's 10 lots up there, I could call you up and say, Greg, I need to do 100 lots. Okay, we'll do it here. Now, somehow we turn the trade in, even though there was no auction market. There was no, you know, I'll just bid for 100 and see if anybody grabs it. We have our little trade on the side. I said, wait a minute, you are doing an over-the-counter trade with a bank that owns 20% of the stock. Well, yeah.
Interesting.
I hope the listeners know what we're talking about, but it's really strange when you combine the OTC. It's like doing flex trades. Well, they don't call them flex. They just put them right in the system.
Huh.
How bizarre is that? SP Futures down 19, NASDAQ Futures down 123. You're right back with Greg and Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas. ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm at Burn on the board. SP futures down 19. NASDAQ futures down 125. Dow futures down 100. I don't really see anything. Let me get rid of my TLT graph here. I don't see anything. I've got actually Boeing's up $5. First time only Boeing's been up in like forever. Microsoft's down $1.97. Salesforce down $3.73. Nothing crazy there. Over in Europe, we have the DAX down 183. That's 1%. FTSE only down 20. That's only 0.2%. CAC around down 72. Another 1%. So the FTSE has not really been following the DAX and the CAC around like point for point every day, but they're all kind of on the same direction. They're up or down. We're in Asia. Nikkei down 27. Boy, that's a slow day for those guys, Greg. They've been all over the place. Hang Seng down 325. That's 1.6%. 20,478. Shanghai up 6 to 3268. Friday, the Dow was up 36. S&P was up 23. NASDAQ up 115. So we're sort of down virtually the same as we were up on Friday. But we had a big week all week last week. Bonds, like I said, we were talking about earlier, up 6 basis points, 4.13. The Bund up 7 basis points, 2.27, and Japan unchanged at 0.97. We have oil, a little bit of a rally, buck and a half up, 70.72, kind of a buck 32, 74.38. Don't forget, oil lost 7% last week, so we're up 2% today. Natural gas up 5 cents, 230, RBOB up 3 cents, 203. We have gold, which has absolutely been on a tear, which is great for me and my clients, because I've had my clients long gold for a while. Up another $20, $27.50. Silver up a buck. That's a 3% move in silver. $34.25. Copper up 5 cents. $4.43. We've actually been a little longer on the way up. Most of it. I'm going to say for my clients, it's been probably the best couple of months we've had in a real long time. Matter of fact, like maybe a real long time. U.S. dollar versus the euro. Get a little of this. Dollars. Euro's down to 108. It was, 111 a few weeks ago, Greg? 2.5%, 3%. That's a big number in a currency. But the pound's hanging in there pretty better.
It's about 30. A half a year move.
Yeah, like a half a year move. And we have Bitcoin down 232, but still at real high levels of 68,272. Matt, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? No bears. What'd you do all day?
No, got nothing. But we do have more on that later. I got to let you know it's currently 6:39 a.m. on October 21st, 2024. Weather in Chicago right now, 54 degrees at O'Hare this morning. Today, a high of around 81 degrees with sunny skies. Tonight, a low of 54. Down in Phoenix, 61 degrees right now, clear skies. Later in the day, sunny and a high of 89. Yesterday in the MLB, saw Dodgers won their game against the Mets 10-5. This Friday, they move on to Game 1 of the World Series with the New York Yankees. In the NFL yesterday, week 7 of the 2024 season, Bears off this week, back next Sunday. Meanwhile, Packers won against Texans in a tight game, 24-22, and Vikings took their first loss this season against the Detroit Lions. Final score was 31-29. Tonight, Ravens play Buccaneers at 7:15, and Chargers play Cardinals at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
Greg, when do we start going to the two Monday night games once in a while?
I don't know.
Is that a,
I don't know,
a plus or a minus? I don't know. I guess it's plus for bars because you got to go to a bar to watch two of them, right?
Yeah, but then you can't really focus. Part of the fun of Monday nights is one game. You get to really dive in.
Well, yeah. Do we have Mr. Flanagan?
You do indeed. Good morning.
Not that we have to hold a tag team for these guys, but you know, unfortunately, I have a weakness. I like baseball, and I've been watching these playoff games. I'm not so sure. What do you think the motivation is? I know you're going to tell me money and schedule, I know. I think the motivation is of knowing who the World Series teams are on a Monday morning and not having a game till Friday night.
Yeah, they must be, you know, have some confidence in the weather reports that I don't have. So you get to this time of the year and you start dragging it out. It's not good for the fans, not good for the game, really.
I mean, they're not on one of the big channels anyway. The game last night was on Fox Sports. So why not start Tuesday?
That's what I would do. I think you kind of pick up on the momentum at least.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You know, that happened with Greg. Was it the NBA? Was it last year, the year before? And I actually was watching the playoff games. And didn't both semifinal series go like 4 or 5 games, and it was like 9 or 10 days before they started the finals?
Yeah, maybe they were planning on longer series.
Yeah, well, what
maybe
I'm saying,
they just want to start on the weekend.
But at least with basketball, it's not a weather issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, so John, you can be our psychologist, our legal psychologist, about, you know, we're talking too much about elections and things like that, but just sort of the state of the world and state of people's mentality. There I was, heading to Home Depot on Saturday. So I pull out an Armitage, mind my own business. And I'm waiting in line, and there's this guy by the Starbucks. He pulled over, and somebody got some coffee, and he's pulling out. So somebody pulls over to wait for him, and he just happened to be in the bike lane, right? So, of course, no self-respecting biker, if they ever want to get out of the bike lane and go into traffic, has a problem with that, right? So this lady bikes by me, not that I noticed. Very attractive, maybe mid-30s. Bought her shorts at the I'll bet you can't believe you got into, could get into shorts these tight type of place. So she goes around the guy, which her detour is like 3 feet. He has to stop by the open window and bitch the guy out for being in the bike lane. Even though the guy was like parked there, he's waiting for somebody to move. Okay, fine. You know, people are on a Saturday morning, they're supposed to be out having a good time, I'm going to bitch the poor guy out. Of course, after the stoplight, the next street has a stop sign. What do you think she does? Right through the stop sign.
I'm sure, well, she barrels through.
Well, barrels through. So clearly, in the minds of a lot of people of certain generations we have in this country, the laws are only for other people. there's no question. Every individual is above the law, and everybody else is supposed to pay attention.
Well, bike riders are permitted to blow through stop signs and stop lights. Maybe not stop lights, but stop signs there.
Well, you're not going to blow through a stop sign if you're liable to get hurt, but if there's no coming,
you take your chances. But you're supposed to do it when there's no, you know,
yeah,
pedestrians or whatever. But it's an exception carved out in the traffic rules, and I, you know.
But now we're going to ask Greg, our younger gentleman here. Now the bicycles that you don't have to pedal, the electric ones, appear to have the same grace. Is that true, Greg? Is that written someplace in a Biker's Hall of Fame or something?
I don't know, but in terms of the risk of going through all those, I don't know. I don't understand why you even risk it, but, you know, whatever.
Well, then, well, now, not just in the electric bikes, what are those things now that they're like, they're like tiny little mopeds or like scooters?
Oh, scooters, yeah.
Now, those, if you used to be a biker, you're grandfathered in. You can go through the stop sign on the scooter. don't know if you knew that or not, but that's also etched somewhere in the, you know, in the biker's rights.
I didn't know. I mean, if you're on a bike, I thought you were supposed to obey the same rules as the...
What are you, acting like an old guy?
Well, didn't John just say they have a carve-out?
No, they don't. In their own mind, they do.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, just from a risk perspective, going through the stop sign might work, you know, 90% of the time, but that other 10, you know, you might be in the hospital. I don't, or dead.
As somebody who likes to still go out, well, I used to walk like 8 or 10 miles. I don't walk that much, but I still walk in there. You are at much higher risk, like at stop signs and stoplights, by getting whacked by a biker than you ever are a car.
But I'd still rather get whacked by a bike or not get whacked than...
But I'm saying, if you're...
If you're hit by a car.
If you see all the cars stopped and you move and you go to walk across the street, don't think for a second that a biker is not going to nail you. He's not going to stop.
Oh, no.
But I'm just saying...
Maybe it was in Rules of the Road some years ago, or I can't remember where I read this, but I had always assumed, too, Craig, that, you know, that they had to abide by the same traffic.
Sure they do. It's a vehicle. It's a vehicle.
Yeah, speed limits and everything else. But I was shocked, you know, to read that they're not held to the same standard at all.
It's not enforced. Because you don't have a driver's license on you, probably. Who's going to pull you over?
Well, you're supposed to have, you know, lights. I mean, there's supposed to be all this, you know, warning bell, all these things that you're supposed to have too before you get on a bike, and a helmet and all this other stuff.
If you're supposed to wear a bike helmet, I don't think is that a law. I mean, the motorcycle it is, but how does Divvy Bike have a massive operation of renting people bikes and there's no helmets? You ever seen anybody on a Divvy Bike with a helmet? I never have.
No, and really, I mean, if the idea is that you. I mean, I've got 3 or 4 of these stations near me. You know, and they have solar panels on them to drive the mechanism for locking and unlocking and all that. But I never see anybody going up to them carrying a helmet. I just think that isn't really what Divvy is all about.
Not to mention the people who ride those things probably don't ride bikes that often. That's maybe a general statement. And probably in your work duds. Of course, nobody wears work duds anymore. But anyway, it is amazing when you put together all the stuff from Twitter, now X, and all the political comments and all the stuff, and the people who make these comments, it's amazing the mentality, how this is all driven for somebody else. And do they do any of that stuff? It's like a guy smoking a cigarette telling you to not smoke, but at least he probably knows it's messing him up and he can't stop. That part I get. But everything you look at now, because everybody seems to be able to publish all over the damn place, you look at it and you wonder, what is this person's really their motivation? Who are these people? I am stunned by, it's all kind of the same subject to me. We now in Chicago are going to have a partially elected school board. And the mayor, I think, still gets to pick 11 of the 21. But still, if you got 10 on the other side, it's going to make for a raucous meeting. I can't believe how competitive these things are. I'm getting more stuff.
Free money.
Well, I don't think is it a paid position, Jen? Can't be very much.
No, I don't think it's paid. Well, the teachers union, you know, is throwing clearly tons of money against their endorsed candidates, and there's, you know, a couple races where it really is contested, and there's big money being thrown at the opposition too by, you know, charter school groups. School choice, backers. So this is kind of focusing where the money, you know, is being attracted from for a couple races, and will always be the case. You know, this is going to, you know, as long as we have an elected school board, there will be bitterly fought and hugely funded campaigns from both sides.
You still get the money on the back end because what you're voting for, the budgets are so huge.
Right. Well, so there's a lot riding up from both, you know, sides of the issue, I think.
Well, very seldom, as you know, so I like to get the information out of my guests more than my, you know, we give really crap about my opinion. I will go out on a limb here and I'll say this teachers union's got to go. this is, they broke all their own charter rules, didn't they, by borrowing all his money to give the mayor and his campaign. What if you're a regular teacher? Why do you want your dues? Why do you want your union going out of on credit to put somebody?
Because they won.
Well, okay, but yeah. I don't think they're going to win again. But anyway, in my district, it was the first time we voted on it. There's a lady named Ellen somebody, Rosenfield or something. And I probably have five or six things from her, plus somehow I got my phone number. Now, she's running against the mayor's candidate. And all her stuff is coming from, like, Vallis is behind her. The alderman's behind her. I don't think the mayor's got, like, five or six aldermen left on his side. Maybe he's 10, but it's not very many. And But everything I've heard about this lady, and I have never met her, how she's been a teacher, a mom, something and something, has done this, that, and the other thing, it's all very positive for her. Right? Now, the other lady who's running against her, I don't know her name, but I should have, since I'm talking about it. Everything I've got from her is what a bitch the first lady is. You know, she's really Republican, and she wants this and that and the other thing, and she wants to get rid of teachers and schools and everything. Everything on their side is totally negative toward this lady. And I've gotten probably five or six things from this Rosenfield, or whatever her name is. Not one of them said anything bad about her opponent. It's just good stuff about her and her record. So even what's a normal American? If you're a normal human being and just got both of these things from the other side, how could you possibly vote for the one that all she does is sling mud and doesn't say anything good about herself? What everybody else is saying is, oh, the lady's got this record. She's very nice. By the way, vote for her. Why would you ever vote for the one that does nothing but say bad things about the other side? Or is that just my Catholic upbringing?
I'd like to see the, you know, financial backing for the one that's running the negative campaign, because the people who will vote for her, you know, are, you know, if they're not reading her literature or being persuaded by it, it's already been, you know, decided that the interest groups are so polarized that they have to block somebody that they don't want. And this has nothing to do really, I think, with, you know, appealing to anybody rhetorically, because generally that would be a turnoff, you know, to see somebody just doing nothing positive. But we know in the bigger picture that doesn't really stop candidates, you know, in any race, really.
Well, it appears she's the mayor's teachers union choice, the one doing the slinging.
Of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the problem with an elected school board, Tom, and in a city with an entrenched, you know, teachers union that is seeing this as the ultimate power play, where, you know, they'll have to work a little bit, they'll have to spend some money, but spending money is not their problem, and they don't have to account for it, you know, because they don't publish their audits anymore. So they've got the money, and the only positive in this is that they are losing members.
Well, and I think way before Mr. Flanagan and Mr. Pappas were ever on the show, I don't know who got, was it Maddie Weber or Kathy Durbin? Somebody had my interview. Matt, I don't know if you can go back in the archives or what the hell we do with all the archives, but you should play this interview that I had. Somehow we had the head of the Teachers Union Pension Fund on here. Matt, do you think you could find that someday? We could play some excerpts?
I could try, yeah.
I'm going to say, other than David Stockman, it was my worst interview ever. Not because I did anything wrong. Stockman, he just started talking and never had to take a breath. So I don't know what kind of body he has, but it was like a 20-minute stump speech. I couldn't even get into it because he just came out with a book. Anyway, but now this guy was talking about pensions and it has to go up and it has to be funded and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, you sort of have to be, I'm not for anybody not getting what's promised to them. I mean, that's America. That's legal. I don't even have Mr. Flanagan to tell me that. I said, you have to be sort of aware that, like, nobody else has a pension anymore. And, you know, and if people start complaining about their pension to 40 people at a party, nobody even knows what a pension is, that's kind of not going to go too far. And I said, you know, it's at a point where the city has less people, and you can't go too far on this stuff, taxing people for these kinds of pension that people think and maybe we actually do deserve. If there's nobody left to pay it, you know, that's sort of interesting. And he just jumped all over and he said, you know what? Damn, I don't care if there's like basically one person left in the city. He better have money because it's your obligation to tax as much as you have to give us our pension. That's basically what he said. I'm paraphrasing from 10, 12 years ago.
I believe it.
And I'm thinking, that's pretty interesting, but if the numbers don't add up, how do you cash that check if there's nothing in the bank? I mean, the city is...
As Stacey Davis Gase would say, find a better question.
Yeah, find a better question. But, I mean, when we're talking about how many people have we lost in the city in the last 2 decades? 400,000? 300,000? We lose another 300,000-400,000. I don't care what you've got written on a piece of paper. There's not going to be the cash. I mean, everybody's talking about... Did Jimmy tell you about his tax bill on the way home from the party on Saturday, Greg? It's up like huge.
No.
There's some point people are going to go, I'm out of here. And a lot of people have reached that point. And I don't know what you do if you keep shrinking and your expenses keep going up. I mean, simple stuff. Your maintenance of your sewers, your maintenance of your light, your street lights and everything are the same as if there's three people living in a neighborhood, if there's 30,000, right, Jen? A lot easier to pay for if there's 30,000. Do these guys have zero comprehension of the numbers? I mean, a young teacher thinks this can be like this 35 years from now if they keep doing what they're doing?
I mean, the story of the teachers' union in the last 14, 15 years, Tom, is it sort of mirrors what's happened in big party politics, too, where there's been a takeover, and an overt takeover. It was never really, they didn't try to sell it as anything other than that. Around 2010 was this, very Marxist-oriented faction of the teachers' union leadership. So that's when, you have Karen Lewis and Jesse Sharkey and Stacey Davis Gates and Brandon Johnson and Jackson Potter and a whole fleet of people who, saw this not only as a stepping stone to greater power for the teachers' union, but ultimately to control city government and to control the school board.
I don't think Karen Lewis is anywhere near as bad as these people.
But she was part of that same faction, and there was really a tilt in the relations with the teachers' union and the city after Lewis came in, and she was a polarizing figure. Looking back on it,
yeah, but she also
not as bad probably as Stacey Davis Gates, but very much in that same mold.
But she was way brighter. She went to Harvard. I mean, you have a conversation with her.
Yeah, but she was obnoxious too, Tom.
She got to have
the dealings with her and Emanuel just.
Well, it reaches the
two
point.
Two big egos going head to head.
Well, you also have to get a point where you have to perform for your people, which is unfortunate, right? I mean,
and not just perform, but to take the union in a direction that was being charted, for better or worse, to the farthest corners of the crazy left. So, they didn't make any bones about it either.
Well, the weird part about the whole mess is anybody who's our age, man, or about Greg's age necessarily, but Audrey will be on today. I mean, Audrey went to Kelly High School, which is a city high school, and Audrey was in the advanced or whatever college prep or whatever. But there were people there that had cooking classes, welding classes. It was a school that reflected all the different people that lived in the neighborhood and what they did for a living. They did all that stuff for people, woodworking, you name it. And Kelly wasn't even a vocational school. And I think you go by Kelly now, I don't think it does any of that stuff, does it, Jen?
No.
And yet these people think they need to make 10 times as much money as they did back then. Why are we spending more and more dough and getting less and less for it? I don't get it. Now, a lot of it has to do with the parenting or lack of thereof or lack of even parents. I mean, I get it. I've talked to some, I think I try and get it anyway. Because I don't get it as much as I'm in a classroom, but I've had ladies who are teachers, mostly ladies, actually a couple guys, say it is so difficult. There's no parents at home to talk to. You call home, you don't get anybody. Anything, you're liable to get the slack jawed boyfriend because the mother's out working and the boyfriend's sleeping off during the day. But you're not going to get, if you can find anybody, and half the kids are on drugs, not half, some percentage are on drugs. If they take the drugs, they're asleep on the desk. If they don't, they're bouncing around the walls. I mean, there's a lot of more issues that people, I think, ever had to deal with in our age. I don't remember anybody on drugs, you. And I mean, most people had a family. Of course, I'm talking about Catholic school. I mean, the dreaded call home, you didn't want that. Now you call home and As a matter of fact, my sister-in-law, way, way back in the day, she subbed it in a public school system. So she always ended up with getting the week on sex education because none of the teachers wanted to teach it. So, you know, she'd land in that week and she'd say it was just a joke. But she would actually call home, said, you know, because she was a victim or whatever, recipient of Catholic school education. A couple kids are being total bleeps. So she calls home. She goes, I never got anybody. I'd get some boyfriend and he'd say, what are you calling me for? I'm sleeping. Slam, down goes the phone. Or the phone just rings or you get a tape recording. She goes, there was nothing like picking up the phone, you know, in our neighborhood where mom's waiting with a huge stick when the kid shows up home. Nothing like that at all. I mean, it's, so you can't just say it's the school itself, but it's certainly part of it because you dodge all that stuff. You don't bring it out in the open. And you know your goal isn't just to get the kid to graduate with an education. I don't know what you do. You just back up and promote people anyway. Well, I don't think I want to pay a teacher who's just promoting people anyway, even though they're directed to do it by somebody else. They probably don't want to do it. What do you suppose the average eighth grader coming out in the city now, what their reading and math scores are? You know, including COVID, is it going to be sixth grade, 5.5? And we're paying for that.
Well, that's optimistic, Tom. The insanity of what's going on now, though, is that, you know, the teachers are complaining that their job is impossible because they have so many things working against them. They've got unaffordable housing, homelessness, you know, broken homes, drug abuse, physical abuse, and yet they're trying to do God's work by continuing to teach these kids who have no, you know, real things going in their favor whatsoever. And all we need is more money, and we could do the job a little better. But I just... You know, the school system got rid of its truant officers some years ago, so there used to be a mechanism to hunt down kids who weren't showing up for class and to meddle in their lives to find out what the heck's going on and, you know, get them in some kind of, you know, queue where they were being monitored and the parents were being, you know, dragged in too. Of course, that's all gone out the window, and you can't have any kind of a school system where supposedly attendance is necessary or good if you want to learn anything, but we've tossed out any kind of, you know, interest in, you know, making this happen and throwing money at teachers who continually complain how difficult their job is. And, you know, we have to put all the stuff into our contract to make it, you know, possible to have affordable housing and everything else. It's like, no, you don't pay the teachers for that. I'm sorry. That's not going to do anything for anybody except the teachers.
No,
the whole thing has turned into this, you know, loss in the funhouse mentality, where it's costing more and more to educate them less and less in the classroom. And I don't see it changing until they blow up the whole system. They're going to have to declare bankruptcy. They're going to have to fire everybody and rehire people selectively and have far fewer schools and have them, you know, run better financially. And the
if we ever get to the point where that happens, what's the city going to look like? That's going to be pretty awful. S&P futures down 20, NASDAQ futures down 123. Come back. We'll talk a little bit about world events, elections. We're going to have Greg opine in on how far is gold going. What about oil? It was way up. Now it was down. Now it's going up again. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues. maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you'll find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now.
You'll get your chance, smart guy.
Warm up, Stocks and Jocks. Good music there, Matt. Good music. SP Futures down 20, NASDAQ Futures 121. I forget who the hell did that song, and I know I saw him in concert. Who was that?
The Animals.
The Animals, that's right.
Eric Burdon.
Of course, they were 100 years old when I saw them, but
they
was.
They don't get younger, no.
Yeah, they were. I saw the. I've seen some of those bands that are they're ancient there, John. Remember, did you go with me to see the Crying Shames? In the high school.
No, but I remember the Crying Shames.
Yeah, they had a couple of hit wonders. Hmm. Is Chicago still performing or not?
I think so. I just read something, but there's some tour or what's left of the group.
Who was it that said they just went and saw the? Was it Bill Moriarty said he just went to see the Eagles? There's one of the guys left. Said they were real good.
Yeah.
Those
were our golden years, Tom. Always.
Well, the good news is those guys were all over us, you know. So
yeah,
it's somebody is. Hey, let's in terms of politics. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, when you're talking, my investors, you know, we have new clients. I'm not taking many new clients. I'm taking some, only if they're the right clients. It's funny, Jen, clients may be getting more selective, but so am I. Is that bizarre or what? But anyway,
that's one of the luxuries of getting older.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, you know, I don't think we can help you. It's not. But we have people, not so much anymore, but Greg, you know this because you talk to my brother all the time. We used to be 45% of our business used to be futures. Crazy, huh? And now it's nowhere near that. But
people just got soft.
Yeah, they did something. But I guess my question is what somebody's going to win this election, right? I mean, there's no question about that. We don't know who the hell it is, but. Somebody's going to win, and there's all kinds of stuff that they're going to be essentially faced with. I mean, no matter how you cut it.
What's the over-under on how long they're stuck in court when whichever side complains about election interference?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I hope whoever it is, you know...
3 months?
I just hope whoever it is whoever wins by enough to where we don't have to go through that crap. Is there any chance of that?
I don't think so.
I think you're probably right about that. But
there's a piece in Real Clear Politics today I just saw a little while ago predicting the same kind of response as in 2016 to a Trump victory. Should that happen, which seems more and more likely, but it's going to be filtered through what happened in 2020. So you'll have all sorts of, you know, recriminations and, you know, arm twisting about whether to certify the results of the election, to challenge results of various states.
There's no way to really recount, so I don't understand what they're going to be stuck in court doing, but it's going to be, short of a landslide in the Electoral College, it's just going to be a bunch of mudslinging.
I have my opinions, but I want to talk about today is how the election's going to go. and it has to do not with, really, it has nothing to do, well, it's something to do, but not a whole lot to do with who on what side is pushing what. It just has to do with demographics and who's around now to vote versus who was around 8 years ago to vote and who the new voters are and those kinds of things. I think it tells quite a picture, but let's talk about that next week. I'm looking here at the debt clock, and the weird part of it is, as much as these two creatures seem to think that they're separate, that they're totally different from each other, and sort of their various hound dogs that love them, the numbers don't lie. I mean, no matter what happens, somebody next year is going to be facing, next March, April, maybe we'll have a president by then. Somebody is going to be looking at this, and Greg, one of these days, since you were the guy who was nasty enough to do it, I'd love to have you tape again. Time, how long it takes us to get $1 million on the national debt thing here. We're up to almost $36 trillion. I'm looking at the federal tax revenue total of $4.9 trillion, and I'm looking at federal spending is $7.2. So after what is allegedly, supposedly a terrific year economy-wise, we're $2.2 trillion in the hole in like 1 year. No matter who it is, and if you listen to the campaign speeches, which I know is just designed to get a vote, I mean, right now they throw a baby off a bridge, you get a vote, both of them probably. You look at the campaign speeches, we got one buffoon talking about lowering taxes, and the other one talking about all these different programs. Well, you look at these numbers and you go, neither one of those things are going to happen. We got one idiot talking about, if he's in front of attorneys, he's saying, I'm not going to tax attorneys. The other one, if he's in front of people who can't afford a house, he's telling them I'm giving $25,000 for a house. Well, I got numbers. I got news for you. The Bodias, as they say in the South Side. None of that's going to happen. Look at these numbers. What happens? What is the cold slap in the face next March for whoever is in the Oval Office? And what does it mean to grains? What does it mean to interest rates? I mean, if China continues to have trouble, even though they're throwing money at everything, they continue to have trouble and all of a sudden cut back on their purchase of U.S. bonds, where do the interest rates go, Greg? They go to 10, they go to 8, they go to 5, they go to 4.5. I mean, we were just talking about that. And if it goes to 8, what are Trump or Kamala to do in the Oval Office when they got 35, 36, it'll be what? 38 by then. $1 trillion in debt and you're paying 8%. Now what? I mean, I've set the stage up.
Print
Greg, you
money.
Talk first. What happens on the...
You have to debase the currency.
But you can only do it to a point. You can't have an inflation rate of 15 or 20. The population won't accept it.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be 15, but...
Well, what's the limit?
You can't pay the interest on the debt if you don't. So they're just going to do what they always do. Right. Debase the... Make it
okay. Now, when you be specific here. I know how you younger guys are. Are we talking about raising the money supply 15% a year, 20, 10, 5? What are we doing?
I think they're going to do exactly what they've done before, and that just print enough.
Give me a number.
To where,
what's the number? How much is enough?
Four percent.
They're doing that now.
Yeah.
That's not gonna cut it from what they're talking about in debt.
You don't think so?
Oh God, no! It's gonna be like 10 or 12.
It buys you additional time because the rest of the world is on fire. So
I don't think 4% does anything.
You got to combat enough to where the dollar continues or the dollar goes lower.
Okay, and
or
COVID,
you have to
COVID
at least
we did,
try.
COVID we did 40%. In 18 months. You're saying we're going to get to the same type of goal with 4?
Well, they're going to want 4 per year.
That doesn't get you anywhere, but...
Well, maybe we're talking up and above inflation.
It'd be one,
so
one equals the other after a period of time.
Right. So, whatever they think inflation is, they'll try to do double.
All right, so I think your solution isn't the right one. John, what do you think? You could be right.
I don't think...
I think you're absolutely right. Your estimate of degree is a little light, is all I'm saying. Now, John, what do you think? What are they going to do?
Well, what I would like to see, this, you know, I guess fantasy, but you know, a complete, you know, slash and burn approach to the federal government and administrative state, and these hideous federal agencies that are, you know, destroying our ability to compete internationally, discouraging, you know, businesses from opening. They're making it unaffordable for people to do anything.
Discouraging the kind of businesses that we like from opening. And the people who want them to do that are the big businesses. They're on the side of big business, both sides. Now, are they going to stop that?
Well, they're going to have to do something. It would be a step in the right direction. It's a signal, I think, to say, you know, we can't spend what we're spending to support a federal government that's just getting in the way of everything that we're trying to accomplish. So,
isn't that what Musk volunteered to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Well, but, okay. You took that bottle and just slashed 80% of spending.
Give him a big whiteout bottle.
What I'm trying to do here is not criticize, but I'm going to say that if what John just said, I'm all for. All right, there is a lot of too much bureaucracy. There's duplication. There's all those kinds of stuff. I'm going to say if we put our best people on it for 8 years. We're going to cut 15% to 20% of the federal grift, all right, and we're going to throw a lot of people out of work or just not hire them, which is even probably worse because all the people we don't want still are there. And I'm going to say that's 2% of the budget at most. So we're going to fight 8 years, and we're gaining 2%. When the people on the right talk about getting rid of the federal government, part of it, and the bureaucracy, they have a huge supporter in this gentleman being me, but they are totally unclear of what that's going to come out to in terms of money. It's not very much in terms of to us it's a lot, and it should happen, but something like 60-some% of the government money goes out to people. If you cut Washington staff by 10% to 15% with all the offices and sell all the desks and all the other BS that goes with it, I think you save 1% to 2% in the budget, John. No more.
Well, if you got rid of, say, for starters, the Department of Education.
What do you mean get rid of them? You can't get rid of them.
Close it down.
All right, so who decides who gets the money that Congress puts out for education? There have to be people doing this.
The idea is not to find other ways of spending the money that you used to spend.
I'm all for that.
You stop spending that money.
But I'm saying...
You first get rid of the thing that's eating it up. Tom, if they could get rid of the Department of Education, I think you would see... It may take some time, but you would see a distinct improvement in student performance.
All right, we're trying to establish in terms of... for some reason, the three of us are in the White House. We've got 4 years before they throw us out. We're trying to cut this budget. We have to zero in on the stuff that makes a difference. Now, Congress, for whatever reason, the federal government, there's a big difference between how our schools are funded here and how they are in, say, France. And I learned this from actually Tom Foley. He said, one of the knuckleheads from the CBOE said something about, what about like education or something? And Tom Foley said he had a number right in the tip of his tongue. There's how many thousand school boards and districts in this country? And like 80 or 90% of the money in the education is all local. He said, do you really want it to be like France, where all the money comes from the central government, and every kid in every school in France, the entire country, is learning the same page of algebra on the same day? And the guy said, well, hell no, we don't want that. He goes, okay, so from the federal side, you keep telling me that I should do something with education. You just told me you don't want me to do something with education. What do you want me to do? Do you want it to be a federal thing where every school teaches the same thing every day and all the money comes? The guy goes, well, hell no, I don't want that. He goes, okay, if you want all these different school boards, what exactly, other than me helping out with books or some kind of programs, something along those lines, what do you expect to get from the feds? And this guy never, you know, he didn't bargain on this kind of a question and answer period, because he obviously didn't know what the hell he was talking about. He goes, well, I had no idea. He goes, you're right, you didn't. This is what Foley told him. He goes, Now, when you say you run the Department of Education, there are probably 500 programs that Congress has put out there to, quote, help fund local education where 80 or 90% of the money comes from. Now, what exactly are we getting rid of? Are we getting rid of the Congress's ability to do that? Because if somebody's going to do it, somebody's got to administer it to somebody. I mean, what are we...
Well, you turn it back to the... You know, the way it is now, you've got all of these school boards, you know, in the tiniest district or in the most bloated system, they're all having to adhere to a bureaucracy at the federal level when it comes to curriculum and testing and everything else. And look at the system we've got as a result. Could it get any worse?
Well, I don't have an issue with it. But I mean, I think what you're, if we were to have somebody who really, maybe Tom Foley, but he's dead, who does what and where and where the money comes from? I think most people who opine on the subject, including me, by the way, have no real idea. I'm going to say that in most local school districts, the place where the money's coming from is really from the state and the local, right? I don't think...
Right, but they're having to conform to a corrupt, bloated, inefficient, anti-intellectual educational standard with the Department of Education.
I think
they just... doesn't serve any purpose except the federal government's keeping people on the
I know that
who are getting in the way of educating our children.
I know that accusation comes flying in, but can anybody who says that, maybe you can anybody, I'll say, from the right, who has this absolute vilification for these people, even know what they do? I mean, I don't have a problem with national testing standards that are legit, where you can at least... One school district can sort of compare themselves against the other. I mean, how can there not be a national test?
And I have no problem with testing, but I don't want the Department of Education coming up with the test.
What do you mean?
Or should they now?
Well, I think there ought to be... You think that somebody should be able to come up with an 8th grade reading test. I don't want to be...
I wouldn't trust the federal government to do what that would stimulate, you know, any harder work by the teachers than they're doing now.
I'm just saying they are...
It will be so aimed so low because it's a national standard, which I don't think is the solution to this at all. For the schools to be successful, they have to be, you know, hanging onto a lifeline to keep going, and that means working a lot harder and spending a lot less money than they're doing now and getting better results.
Right,
and you can't stimulate that from the federal level.
What percentage of the money Chicago Public Schools do you think comes from the Fed? I'm going to say less than 5%.
But how much of their control?
I don't think they control anything. State decides where you take the ACT, the other test. I mean, the big money comes from the state, and then the local piles on top of it.
But the state, you know, has very little control, I think, when it comes to, you know, its testing standards.
If the federal government is going to come up with money...
Here's the thing, Tim. It's a carrot and stick thing where the federal government wants the states to, you know, the whole No Child Left Behind stuff and all sort of race to the top, all this Arne Duncan BS during the Obama years. It was to attract interest in federal money that would be doled out to particular, you know, local school districts that had done the best job of sucking up to the federal government and doing what they were told to do.
Well,
and then you give them money.
Well, getting money from the Fed clearly is something people want to do. But anyway, let's kind of. Head Start. I'm sure they're gonna want whatever left of Head Start. I'm sure they're gonna try and want to control because that's federal money. You have to
and get the federal money out of it. Then.
Why?
Because it's not accomplishing anything, and we can't afford it.
A lot of the programs.
We got enough trouble trying to hold the system.
A lot of the programs they have are for books. They're for a certain amount of. I think there's federal programs that are getting lead out of schools and things like that.
Yeah, but don't get me started on academic publishing, because that's just being fed by these two.
What I'm saying, I think they control Head Start. I mean, there's an amazing amount of blame flying around that people on the internet just fan the flames of this stuff. They don't know what the hell they're talking about in terms of who funds what. I mean, these issues again. I'll bring. Are we talking about? You know, oil way up because inflation's going way up. But how much more inflation can the average person in this country take? I don't think, Greg, you're saying...
It doesn't matter.
I think I'll tell you what, it sure as hell mattered in 78 when people were voting for people.
Yeah, but that was what? That was three times what it is right now.
Published. I'm not so sure it was ever three times what it is right now.
Well, yeah, but there's the interest rates for, say, the 10-year and the 30-year were a lot different.
People with cash were able to keep up. That was different. If you had cash in a bank, you can't really keep up. Now you don't. You're getting 1% in the bank, and the inflation's 8 or something. Or 6 or 5, wherever the hell you want to, where you think it is.
So, say, even if inflation is that high now, what is it? You can't have, if it's 15 back then for the savings, or not savings, for your interest rates. And
that's what you're getting in the savings, by the way.
Even if it's, call it 5% inflation now and 5% in interest, that's still, you still got 30% more. I mean, I don't think we're close.
Well, we're certainly not close if you're a saver.
The thing is, Tom, we don't have a playbook for having tried this in any successful way before. And I pin a lot of the blame, in the first couple of years of the Reagan administration, where the tune that Reagan was singing, oh yeah, we're going to get government out of your lives, we're going to slash taxes. And of course, he did slash taxes and never touched spending. So
he slashed taxes for like a year and a half, then they had another tax bill that raised everything, but didn't raise it to the same people, they raised it to different people.
But then we also started, institutionalizing huge deficits.
Yep.
Because we couldn't quite address the tough question of, it's one thing to slash the money coming in, which, they were successful at doing, but they didn't even try to stem the outflow of money on idiotic stuff, no matter what Reagan was saying.
They didn't have to. They didn't have to. With money flying into the U.S., you didn't have to do that, so why would you?
No, we started having deficits then, and then when we started going to war afterward and not paying for that, then all of a sudden one thing led to another.
But why does one thing lead to another? It's because you're able to, not because you're have priorities. It's just what happens.
It's when you come up with a tax decrease and you tell people it's actually going to be accretive, and it's not.
It doesn't matter, because regardless, money was coming into the U.S. The dollar was doing okay. This was a place where people wanted to park money. That's the reason it could happen, not because whatever he was saying. Yeah, the votes happened, but the benefit was going to be there no matter what, because that money was coming in.
Well, yeah. And it took the pressure off of having to cut anything. So that was a missed opportunity.
So the question is
to let people feel what we're.
Is it still coming in?
Well, you got to understand the era, and it's Jan maybe didn't do taxes for people then, and you weren't alive, so you have to understand the era. We had a long period of inflation. Okay, we also had God. I think I have one of these at home somewhere. We also had 15, 20 tax brackets, Jan, something like that.
Oh yeah,
it was something you wouldn't even believe, Greg. Although we're up to like 7 or 8 now, but if you made like $15,000, your tax was like $1,200 plus the difference between 14.5 and 15, which might be 10 or 12% or something. Then if you made 17.5, it was X plus like 14% of the difference between 15 and 17.
I don't think that really matters.
Well, no, stop. Before you do the young person thing and say, I don't know what I'm talking about. If all of a sudden in 1969 or 70, when the inflation really started, and you had a cost of living increase and you're a welder someplace at Pullman, and your salary went from 16 or 17 to, say, 24 or 25, instead of paying 10 or 12% tax, you're now paying 16 or 17 or 20, but it's really worth the same amount of money.
There goes your raise.
There goes your raise. And now, but who's the big benefactor of that is the federal government. The biggest benefactor of inflation all along the way, which you, by the way, are very articulate in saying, they are the big, but in ways you're not even thinking. Okay, right now, it's the same thing. If somebody made 40 grand before COVID, I think his rate was 12%. Now the 40 is now worth 50, so if he ended up getting his 30% raise in 4 years, the difference between the 40 and 50 is paying 22% out. It's a big difference. When Reagan came in, people were gagging on this. So part of his Tax Reduction Act was to get people somewhat back, not all the way, to where they were before this all started, where somebody making 24 grand a year is paying like 25% or some ridiculous number when they never should be at that level. So there was a lot to catch up on in his tax bill. But what they didn't estimate properly is how much it was going to cost them. So then, like, it was a year and a half later, was it the Economic Recovery Act or some crap? They had put through a tax increase, which is the biggest one.
What enabled all that stuff?
What do you mean enabled? They passed the law.
They passed the law, but underlying, you had such a huge strength. You had a trade surplus. You had the dollar.
We're coming out of a huge recession.
Yeah, but still, your surplus was there. Your tech was there.
They had zero surplus. They were in debt. So now coming out of it, they said, "Oh, now we're even in more debt." So they raised rates on what? Social Security and all the other stuff they raised, except for. They kept in place the cuts from the first one, then raised all the other taxes the second time through. Your payroll taxes and everything all went up. So, in essence, what they gave to the poor guy who went from 16 to 24 or 23 during the inflation era, they took back by raising his Social Security and unemployment and stuff, right, John, and Medicare.
Yeah.
So the schmuck on the street, like us, ended up probably either worse off or in the same place, right John?
Right.
Yeah, but the schmuck on the street was also getting Intel, Apple, IBM, Microsoft. All that stuff was just starting to grow. They all had money in those companies.
No. How many people do you... There was no 401ks back then. How many schmucks on the street owned stock?
Well,
10%?
That's the same as it is now.
No.
But
an appreciable part of the population has a 401k that has stock. It's way more than the... I mean, like in 1929, you're reading books that every single person, even the shoeshine boy, had stock. What was it, John? 7% of the population owned stock in 1929? All the stuff you read isn't necessarily true.
Well, in general, 10% of the people control most of the stock market.
Without
money
a doubt.
Anyway,
so I agree.
That it hasn't really changed. But the growth was there. I mean,
yeah, well,
all the... In terms of
when you say growth, Reagan was around in 1982, right, Jen? When this started?
Yeah.
Okay, the market had not gone up a smidge since 1967 to 1982.
Didn't the Cold War end?
But I'm saying,
I mean, those 67? Are huge, and there's nowhere to go with all those other people wanted to take their money and put it.
You're
here.
Talking about the peace dividend, is what the term was.
Well, it doesn't hurt.
Well, no, but. I'm saying from 67 to 82, that's why people had all their money in the bank. The market hadn't moved at all. It's the history there is phenomenal. It's so counterintuitive, Greg. I can't give you grief about it because you're right. What you're saying is what should have happened. I'm saying it didn't, right, Jack?
The market broke 1,000 in 82, was it that one?
I think it broke it originally in, if not, it got real close in like 68 and didn't really break it to 82. It was.
You know, we were way outpacing inflation in terms of growth.
I'm telling you, the market from 68 to 82 didn't go anywhere. And the inflation was rampant.
Right.
S&P futures down 14, NASDAQ futures down 87. Be right back with Audrey Johnson. John, hang around?
Sure.
Okay.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our Better Business Bureau A-rated team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Call now for a free case review and a low price guaranteed quote to get you protected today. Call now, 800-388-4901. That's 800-388-4901. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-388-4901.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Lone Wolf X, Stocks and Jocks. Greg, before you go, I need your opinion on this. Disney will name Bob Iger's replacement in early 2026. We're in 24. How many more encores does Iger have at Disney? Two or three?
I think he's done after this one.
Okay. I think he's got at least one more encore.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of nine lives.
Like the concert. What's the most encores you ever saw at a concert? I never saw more than two, but I think there have been more than two, haven't there?
I've seen more classical concerts, but they're rare. More than four is very rare.
I mean, at a rock concert, I think I saw two. You ever done more than that, Greg?
Not at a rock concert.
I mean, a lot of times you get one pretty much all the time back in the day, but once in a while you got two. I never got three. The bus was idling or something. Anyway, S&P futures down 14. We've come back some here. NASDAQ futures down 87. We have over in Europe. The DAX down 149.8%. They've come back a little bit, too. FTSE down 21.2%. CAC around down 59.8%. They were both close to 1%, so we're creeping back up here a little bit worldwide. Nikkei, or Asia's close. They're not doing any creeping. Nikkei down 27 points. Let's call that flat. Hang Seng down 325, 1.6%. 20,478. They're heading towards 20,000 again. I don't know if they're going to go down that low. We will see. Shanghai up 6.2%, 3268. Way review on Friday, Dow up 36, NASDAQ up 115, and the S&Ps was up 23. Bonds, here's where the movement is, up another 5 basis points, 4.13, went up 8 basis points, 2.26. Greg, what do you suppose all those bonds that they bought at negative interest rates look like in their portfolio? Talk about a zombie portfolio, eh?
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops. Japan 0.97, unchanged. Well, a little rally here this morning, not as much as earlier, but up $1.18. 70.40, I think it was up like, 125 or something. Brent up 105, 74.11, natural gas up 7, 232, RBOB up 2 cents, 203, gold up now, it's up 23 bucks, 27.53, silver up of a whole buck. God's sake, Greg, when was the last time you saw silver up a buck? It's 3%, 34.26. I am so happy we've just kind of let this thing run. Normally, I can't wait to sell stuff when it's going my way. This time, I've kind of refrain from that, and we're just kind of watching it go up. I can't believe that. A euro, 108, so the dollar is up strong against the euro. Pound, not as much, 130. And Japan is 149. So Japan's gone from 142 in the last week to 149, Greg, something like that. That's a big move. Now, again, that's 149 yen to the dollar. It's the exact opposite as the way you look at the euro or the or the British pound, just to keep us confused. Crypto down 378, 68,126. Man, how about a quick traffic, weather, sports, and we'll get to Audrey.
Sounds good. Yeah, currently it is 7:39 a.m. on October 21st, 2024, here in Chicago. As far as traffic, inbound Kennedy from O'Hare to Jane Byrne Interchange is about 39 minutes. Outbound is about 24. Weather in Chicago, 54 degrees at O'Hare this morning. Today, a high of around 81 degrees, if you can believe it, with a low of 54 degrees tonight. Sunny skies are expected. Down in Phoenix, 61 degrees right now. Clear skies later in the day, sunny, and a high of 89. Yesterday in the MLB, Dodgers won their first game against the Mets, 10-5. This Friday, they're going to be seeing the New York Yankees at the World Series in Game 1. The NFL yesterday, Week 7 of the 2024 season, Bears were off, back next Sunday. Packers, meanwhile, won the against Texans in a tight game, 24-22, and Vikings took their first loss of the season against the Detroit Lions. Final score was 31-29. That's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
We have Audrey?
We do indeed.
Yes, you do.
Hey, Audrey, how are you?
Jimmy Buffett three times in Tinley Park.
he was three times?
Yep.
Well, there you go. Where was that, you said? In Tinley Park?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
At the amphitheater there.
What is that? Is that the Tweeter
World
Center?
World Music.
Wasn't that the Tweeter Center for a while or something? All right. Well, there you go. So, Bud, what's happening in the world of real estate? Mortgages up 1 week, down the next, but kind of with the 10-year creeping like this, I don't think they're going down much more. Do you, or what do you think?
I think I have a bad internet connection this morning, so sorry.
Why don't you log off and log back in? We're hearing like every other word of yours, too. Why don't you give us one more shot?
All right.
John, I don't think you can count on these mortgage rates going down too much more if this 10-year keeps moving, do you?
No, I don't. I think there'll be a lot of disillusioned people if they're waiting, till next year, till next spring or something, expecting numbers to work better for them. I don't see any big movement there.
No, I just, when we're done with all the fighting on this election stuff, I don't know how either side is going to try and even up what's happened to the different parts of the economy in the last few years, or even if they recognize it or they care. I don't even know what level we're at on either one of them, to tell you the truth. I mean, on the show, we continually recognize what's been happening to different groups in the society. I don't see anybody really even recognizes it all that much and wants to talk about it. I don't see any solution to putting it back together, to you, or trying to even things out. I don't know.
I think people's expectations are so out of kilter with what the reality is going to be. Everybody's putting a lot of stock in some kind of transformative, change, and I think that's just too optimistic.
Well, I don't see how the lower groups are ever going to move up. The only thing that's an equal thing is some like massive market crash, which I sure as hell don't want to see. That would be an equalizer. I'm not so sure it's the one we're looking for. But, I don't know. Time will tell. I mean, that's what happened in 29, but I don't think we want to spend the rest of our life in the 30s, do you? I don't.
No.
I mean, that would not...
Which turned into the 40s, really, until the end of the war.
Well, so now we got to come up, conjure up another world war to get us out of it? Where everybody else gets...
That's one of my biggest fears. You'll become, economically, prudent. Do something really stupid, or allow somebody else to blunder into something that we have to bail out, and this will take the heat off of the powers that be in the name of some other product thing they're trying to sell on the international stage. And it worked to some extent in World War II. I just don't see it likely to work again.
Yeah, I wonder what trouble that's having with her stuff. I mean, she goes through AT&T. Maybe they're having an issue out in New Orleans, but hopefully she'll get herself back on here. But she's got a lot of stuff, exciting stuff to talk about, things going out. I mean, it is really something to watch. Audrey, they're very successful. I mean, she's still connected with PTI. She's still a 37 here, but she basically does most of her stuff in real estate. And she's been at a... first of all, since she's not in, I can talk about her. Wanda's terrific at her business. I mean, she really is. And it's, everybody likes her. Real estate is 90, it seems to me it's like 90% psychology. And she's good at that. You know, and but it's stunning, Jen, the difference. Almost all of her clients now are some sort of cash buyer. Either money they got from parents or money they got from their place that they bought for $100,000 20 years ago and it's now selling for $400,000 and they sell that and buy a townhouse for $390,000 because they're downsizing. It's trading chips. It's nothing like somebody over the last 20 years had a job, worked, put their money in a savings account and now has $400,000 in cash. It's nothing like that. And if you talked about, we had, I forget her first name, who was the lady Russell hit on a couple weeks ago? Here's a lady who's in finance. She's doing terrific. She's head of the finance forum group. Seemed bright as hell to me. And very nice. Talking about her future and her loans and her job and where she has to go to get this and that. And I'm going, yeah, Jen, I don't see, unless she, you know, finds a guy who's, I'll say the term, has a good job and is unencumbered by debt. I don't see her walking into a new car showroom anytime soon and saying, I'll take that one. Or walking into an open house and saying, this is mine. I don't see how those numbers match up at all. And this is what, on a federal, state, local level, these guys can ignore this forever, but they think they can. But someday, both of these candidates, whoever lands somewhere, is going to get the cold slap in the face saying, wait, I just can't do that. We're like broke or something. I mean, there's some, if you listen to the last 2 weeks of the campaign, it's, and you watch the debtclark.org, you go, are these people on the same planet or are just saying this because their constituents or whoever they think they're going to get are dumb as a rock? Maybe that's it. You know, I don't know what the story is, but clearly there's going to be a major cold slap in the face on this at some point, in my opinion.
The situation you described with all these, you know, clients having, you know, cash in hand, that's of course keeping, you know, housing values artificially high for everybody else.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
If the stuff at the high end continues to move because there's a select group of people who don't have to worry about interest rates and don't have to worry about 15 versus 30 year mortgages, and that's kind of the only activity that I see propping up the market right now. Just anecdotally, so
yeah,
that
confirms
I've been seeing too. I think that's going to put people farther behind in their plans to own a house in the next year or 5 years, given how, you know, the system is tilted against them right now.
Well, this area by her where they just had a, you know, if you ever get out once in a while, I'd be able to show you these places. This area by her was a, you know, it was not a big farm or something. It was a cornfield, and so these guys buy it, and it's this big development. It's got to be, I'm going to say it goes from 153rd to maybe, I don't know, Jen, 100.
Okay, I'm back.
There you are. I was just telling Jen, how big is that development by you, Ed? Is it half a mile long?
What are we talking about?
The one where they're building all the new places right by the end of your street?
I don't know. Maybe 30 acres?
I'm saying it's a half a mile, goes 153rd to, like, what, 149th, and then the other way is maybe, it's like a half mile by a third of a mile, something like that?
No, it's not even that big. I would say, I would say maybe 30 acres max.
And so these guys are putting places up, and Art keeps telling me, I mean, she went to look at one, and we're talking 800, 900 million bucks, and I'm going to say, how many of the people wandering in there and buying those places? We're talking about what you missed. We're talking about a lot of your clientele are cash buyers, money from another house, money from something, and how it is kind of the market in a lot of places right now. It's not your young lady that was on a couple of weeks ago marrying some dude and walking in and buying it and putting down a down payment and buying it. And it's what percentage of the people that are moving into that place you think are first-time buyers? Is it 10%?
Well, you know, no. That's, you know, that you're talking about Those are ranch duplex townhomes. That's appealing to your seniors, citizens, your people who don't want to necessarily, they want to get a smaller home, but they don't want to move down in quality. So it's the really high-end development where it's a two-bedroom unit, starts at $700,000, which is pretty rich for most people. But that's not something that's intended for your starter buyers, or it's probably not even something that's going to appeal to them. This is for your people who want to stay within a community, who have their roots here, who are selling their home that is appreciated greatly, and they've probably done well for the stock market. They're just rolling it into that to a new home.
Well, that's what we're talking about. It's not.
But you're getting.
That's exactly.
Things. You're getting, and then you're getting your. What are you saying?
I mean, you're coming in out a little bit, not as bad as before. So.
Yeah, the whole show's been breaking up that I've been listening to also. So. I don't know. We're having problems this morning.
I think you better call Mr. AT&T and say, hey, fix this. Who is Mr. AT&T?
Oh, I've been after them forever. Yeah. Is it going to be better if I hang up and you talk?
Well, not exactly. You're doing all right now, so just keep going. If it gets too bad, we'll kick you off. Right now, we can hear you.
But it's a... No, you know, what's kind of nice about the area, I'm on all southwest suburbs here, especially I'm in Orland Park, is that there's enough different types of housing that you're still the first time buyer is still going to find something. Is it going to be a high end, maybe move in property? No, but there's a condo or a townhome that somebody could probably get a foothold in. Is it a cheap foothold? What it was 15 years ago? No, it's not. But that's just predominant everywhere. That's not an Illinois phenomenon. That's across the board.
Yeah, you were saying a while ago that people were, what do you want to use it, escaping or moving to Indiana, how they were getting things so much cheaper. That's sort of evened up, you were telling me last week, that it's not that much cheaper anymore, is it?
Well, so many people from Illinois have run to Indiana that they've driven the prices up.
Well, yeah.
So it's still a nice place to live, Indiana.
Well, despite
exceptional. Everything they built that's new construction by the border is, you know, you're not saving a bunch from Illinois anymore like you used to, but you are still getting better taxes, I think a way better run state. So that's what's motivating most people is the environment you live in. Not the prices, but a lot of people who are very wealthy are fleeing to Indiana or the surrounding states. They're looking for better government.
Well, and how long can it... I mean, we're not talking about some place in Mississippi, or I shouldn't be degrading Mississippi, but it's at some point you're selling homes. And even now, you sell once in a while when you see a really good one. You can't wait till you show me pictures of it. And Aud has some pretty nice places she's been shown. First thing I think of, because I keep doing some construction at my place, there's places you have on the market or have had on the market for like $1.2 million. You couldn't touch putting back up again for less than $1.8 million. I mean, you see these homes in Indiana that were going for, $150,000. Hell, you can spend $100,000 on a kitchen now. So, it only was a matter of time before those prices went up to at least somewhere near the duplication value, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. The problem happened during, COVID, too, is that lumber and everything, as you know, cement, lumber, nails, anything you can think of you need for a house, was crazy. And while you've seen some relief, it's, to reconstruct any house now, it's not, and the houses they're building, to your point, they tend to be smaller. If you're putting a home in the same area on the same type of lot, you're going to get a smaller home most of the time. Unless you're willing to pay up the differential on it, because then the builders can't make it happen right now.
No, I mean, it really is. Stuff is incredibly expensive, and God's sake, you can spend $100 a gallon for paint if you want to, right? I mean, it's pretty scary.
One of my friends just put a deck on their home, which used to be either a weekend project or you'd have somebody come and do it, and a deck which was, I'm not talking, fancy gazebo outdoor kitchen. I'm talking about a pretty straightforward deck. It was $45,000.
Yeah, that's something. What are they?
That's a lot of money for a deck.
It sure is, but it's a lot. That's a lot of wooden nails. And not even on like a hill or something where you have to have a guy who knows what he's doing to put the thing up. Yeah. Jen, what are you seeing in your hood? Contrast your area, Jen. What are you talking about in New Orleans?
Well, the thing I'm noticing, and this may be happening in Orland and other places too, Audrey, the neighborhoods that are viable, you know, that have somewhat stable, you know, populations, people coming and going, values inching up. Now the push I can see, you know, like in Logan Square, and this happened in Lakeview years ago when I was living down there, that on older blocks that, you know, had frame houses built in the 1890s or 1900s, stuff was getting knocked down left and right, and you know, fancier three flats, six unit condo buildings were going up instead. And my old block on Logan Square on Whipple Street was in block club the other day with all these, they were working men's cottages that were built, you know, early on, frame places, modest, you know, size, little backyards, small lots, but, you know, they're just getting, you know, decimated. They're getting knocked down left and right, and other stuff being built in its place, which of course, you know, is good for the neighbors when it comes to housing values, but it freezes out anybody with have a shot at picking one of those places as their first home. So I could see any neighborhoods that have a shot at surviving or prospering are becoming incredibly expensive. And the ones that are, you know, not moving up are, you know, being forgotten and left behind, and stuff is just sort of crumbling and falling down. So there's a real tipping point where, you know, if you're doing well, you're going to do better. And if you're not doing well, you're going to, you know, continue to do worse. And I think it's not just a Chicago phenomenon.
No, that's true. And to your point, the perfect example of that was Hinsdale, this has been going on for a long time, not recently, but it continues, is that Hinsdale was a beautiful little village. It had all these beautiful, and now it's, you know, huge mansions. You know, that's just that was all like the whole mini mansion. Mansion era, where they're tear downs there, but it happens everywhere. It's happening, interesting enough, even in closer in communities like Burbank, which is the little suburb southwest of Chicago, very blue collar. When they built the little brick raised ranches that were like three bedrooms, one bath, and a basement way back when, they were like $20,000, you know, back in the early 70s, let's say, and they're still there. But what I've seen is people buying, to your point, John, little old frame houses or one of these ranches, tearing it down, and it's not unusual. You see Burbank, big brick homes, $400 to $600 now. I mean, a lot more than you ever did in close-in communities. So you will see that happening in different places where it's not taken over the neighborhood, but they are like infill. And you'll see that Oakmont, different areas like that too, Palos Hills, where there used to be little brick bi-levels, they're still predominantly that, yeah, but you'll see the big homes pop up, you know, here and there too. But there's very little land close to Chicago. So if you want to stay close to Chicago, you're going to end up paying the differential for it.
What is it doing to our buddy Jimmy, who's been on the show, we were talking to once on Saturday. By the way, John, you missed a hell of a apple an apple squeeze off.
I'm not. You told me that the yield was better, right?
The yield was better. We're trying to figure out why the yield was better, but it was maybe because of the workers. I don't know. But anyway, Jimmy owns a condominium near me. I don't think it's, you know, it's in a building. I don't think it's one or two bedroom condo, you know, it's in a three walk flat walk up type of thing. He bought it, I'm going to say 8-10 years ago, and I don't know the price. I don't want to get into it with him, but he just got a big run up in his tax bill. Now, I'm guessing that his insurance hasn't gone down. I mean, it's probably gone up some, but not like he's in Florida or something. What is that doing to his? I'll bet he can't sell that thing for what he paid for it. I don't want to talk to him about it or nag him about it or ask him, because it's probably a bad thought. But is that happening around, Odd, in some of these places? And, Jan, I mean, these ancillary...
No, not by me.
Not by you, but in other places, is it? It's got to be. It has to be making a difference in, like, Flossmoor and those places where it's really going up. I mean, I guess how much... Nancy was on last week saying that taxes and insurance are becoming a bigger, bigger piece of when on the mortgage that she gets people than it was 10 years ago or 15 years ago.
Well, sure. Oh, well, that's been a trend for probably, 20 years?
What did Carol say?
The acceleration in the taxes is that's probably more damaging than the price of the house. I mean, in some of these houses where people are paying, you know, maybe $350, $400 for a house, the taxes are almost the same as the house payment or more.
What did Carol say last week?
People think they could afford a house. What?
I mean, Carol said something last week about one of his friends in Florida just has a condo, did have a condo, is thinking about whatever, something going on in Florida. And I think, John, he's in the $250,000, $300,000 range, but the taxes and insurance... If you just amortize that, you needed to make $70,000 a year just for that.
Yeah.
Oh, their maintenance fees are high. You know, with insurance, so you've got a $2,000-$3,000 a month maintenance fee sometimes.
Yeah, and then the taxes. He says if you just figured that was your mortgage, you needed $70,000 just to afford that, let alone the mortgage. I mean, there's got to be some areas now, Odd, where the taxes and insurance are more than the mortgage, aren't they? And for some people.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's absolutely.
The such valuation on my place here, I just got the notice a week or so ago that it's up 30% over last year.
You're rich.
You know, you can be certain.
You're rich.
You know, the value of the property hasn't gone up 30% in a year. So.
How could the value not go up? The city said it did. You must be rich.
Well, you only know when you try to sell it what it's really worth. So, yeah.
Whatever the difference is, you send Mayor Johnson a bill. He'll send you a check. You think, God,
the insurance is up more than that. Over the last 5 years, the insurance has more than doubled. So,
well, you know there's a hurricane coming right at you.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, and God.
Who knew I was? I guess I was in a floodplain, but I never knew it.
I'd give us a shameless plug, will you?
If you're looking by yourself, give me a call at 708-846-6494 or send me an email at AudreyJohnson@realtor.com.
And I will say, Odd does a nice job for everybody. I mean, so I mentioned earlier when you weren't on the air that you become 80% psychologist.
That's pretty true.
but at least once you make the sale, you're not. I'm going to say you're not done with your clients because you end up with people and their family and everybody else, right?
I have one family, big Irish family that I've sold seven of the kids' houses and the mom and dad over the years.
What was the Hispanic family where the lady bought all the condos for all her granddaughters? Well, how many did that get you?
My God, that was probably five or six then. She's just delightful.
John, this lady came from Mexico. She opened up a child care. Was it in Summit on or something? And she ends up with like three or four of them. And she gets huge ratings from everybody. Everybody loves her. And she's buying her granddaughter's condos, for God's sake.
She immigrated to America with nothing when she was a kid. Started a business. Has done phenomenal. Has these beautiful, beautiful daycare centers. She's just an amazing woman. Got all her kids through college. Once they graduated, she got them a condo so they could get out with their lives. She goes, now I've set them up. Now it's up to them.
It's a lot of those people.
So you got to admire that.
She's not afraid of work, huh, Jen?
Nope. God bless her.
God bless her. But that's the American dream, isn't it? I mean, it absolutely is. S&P futures down 13. The S&P is down 81. Odd, thank you. Jen, as usual, thank you. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Suppose you run your business and let me run mine.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
That's all, folks.